New report explains that raising the minimum wage would cut poverty in America, but it could also cut up to 1 million jobs.
They're back on their old tropes about job killing and hurting the economy and hurting teenagers and threats about people losing their jobs.
It's a terrible idea because anyone running a small business that now is forced by the government to raise wages, they're going to lay people off.
It turns out that their models were wrong.
If you look at all of the times we've increased the minimum wage, there's really no correlation between what opponents say, which is if you raise the wage, you're going to have job loss. In fact, you often see the opposite. You often see employment actually increasing.
From the offices of Civic Ventures in downtown Seattle, this is The Other Washington, a podcast on policy and politics from outside the Beltway.
Way outside the Beltway.
Far from the pundits and politicos who dominate the national debate. I'm David Goldstein.
And I'm Paul Constant.
And each episode, we'll be taking you on a deep dive into a single policy issue, explaining how it works,
how it doesn't,
and how conventional politics often gets in the way of implementing effective policy. Welcome to episode 6. The minimum wage.
No, I think we already did that one, though, Goldie.
I don't know. I don't have a good comeback on that one. It's the maximum wage? what's some apocalyptic movie? The Hunger Games. Catching Fire. There we go. There we go. That's it. Welcome to episode 6, The Minimum Wage, Catching Fire. Well, that's the sort of dystopic reality we were told Seattle, Washington would get if we raised the minimum wage. And now, what, a year? Two? How long has it been? 2 years since that ordinance passed?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah.
And it's just empty shops and...
Every time I try to go out to eat in Seattle, it's just a hellscape. I have to kill a wild boar with my bare hands because nobody's willing to serve me any food. It's terrible.
Of course, anybody who lives in Seattle knows that's the opposite of the truth.
It is a lie.
It's very hard to find wild boar these days, what with all the fancy new upscale wild boar restaurants opening.
Workers in two states can expect raises that will bring the minimum to $15 an hour.
Many business owners are concerned, but the governor believes this will help stimulate the economy since workers will be spending that extra money.
When FDR proposed the minimum wage, you know what he said? If you work full time, you should be paid a wage that provides a decent living.
So we're revisiting this topic because a lot has actually happened over the past few months, including significant minimum wage increases in Oregon, California, and New York.
So joining us on the podcast today is Zach Silk, the president of Civic Ventures, our non-plutocratic overlord. Hi, Zach.
Hi, guys.
So, Zach, you've headed up a lot of campaigns and political movements, and I was wondering if maybe you could talk about how this movement compares to others that you've seen and what's behind this push for $15.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that we've seen a dramatic acceleration in progress on the issue in just a very short period of time. I mean, the first strikes for 15 were taking place just a handful of years ago, and now we have millions and millions of workers are going to be covered by a $15 minimum wage in a handful of years now that California, New York, Oregon have gone. And there's other states that are lined up to go by ballot, including here in Washington State, Maine, and others coming at this election cycle. So I think very few people would have predicted that we would be fully realizing the promise of 15 in such a short period of time. On the other hand, the movement that has been built is capitalizing on the energy that had been on the ground for a long time prior to it being channeled into a campaign. We have workers all over the country. Their wages have stagnated. They've been frustrated by a political system that's not responsive to their needs. And what it took was good, smart campaign people to give their frustration and anger a channel to express itself productively. And that's, at its core, what every good social movement is a channel for people to express themselves and get stuff done. And I think we really see that with 15, both locally as it came here in Seattle, and now this germ has spread across the country, and we see the seeds of it coming in other states. And I think you're going to see a pretty impressive national movement built based on what people have done here in the other Washington.
So there's been a huge shift in public opinion over the past year or so. I think a recent poll said something like 59% of Americans now support a $15 minimum wage, which a couple of years ago was considered a joke. And yet the other side continues to combat it with the same old, oh, if you raise wages, it'll kill jobs argument.
I agree. They're back on their old tropes about job killing and hurting the economy and hurting teenagers and threats about people losing their jobs. But that's a lot less powerful when you're talking about lifting people out of poverty, giving them money that they can spend in their community, and giving them a sense that they can be powerful actors in their own lives again. I think that's part of the organizing tool that this has been, is it's really hard to wake up in the morning and risk your job, risk your reputation, and risk your family livelihood for 50 cents more an hour. It's awfully easy to get up in the morning and risk your job, risk your livelihood, and stand strong with your family if you're going to double my wage. And that was the big difference in what we did. And so it also allowed us to argue on a different territory too, of course. We were not any longer arguing about small microscopic increases in the minimum wage. We were arguing about big leaps. And that really shined a light on the fallacy that increasing wages were going to cost jobs. It's never been the case. We know that based on past evidence. We've seen that already in Seattle. As the wages have gone up, our economy has grown and gone more robust here in Seattle, and our unemployment is down. Jobs are up. And so I think it just caught our opponents really flat-footed. They're trying to use an old argument within a new frame, and it's not working.
I think $15 an hour could be a job killer for small businesses. But I am supportive of raising the minimum wage. I think it's the right thing to do in Seattle, the right thing to do in the country.
So again and again, we find that the media tends to mischaracterize this issue, and it's very obvious that something is going on here. So we brought in Hannah Brooks Olson, who is our project manager here at Civic Ventures and a recovering journalist, to talk to some people and figure out what was going on. Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
So what'd you find?
I talked to a few people, the first of which was Igor Volsky, who's a friend of ours from Center for American Progress. And Igor spends a lot of his time monitoring the media and sort of paying attention to public opinion as well around these kinds of progressive issues. And I wanted to ask him not only why the media sort of continues to believe that there's two sides to this story, but also what he wishes people were talking about more and how he wishes that this issue is being couched.
My name is Igor Volsky. I'm the deputy director of the Center for American Progress Action Fund, where we, in a broad coalition with partners, help with messaging and campaign support for increasing the wage and ensuring that everybody is paid fairly.
So many regular people still seem to believe the adage that if you raise wages, you kill jobs. So I have two questions for you about this. First, is that demonstrably true? And if not, where did that idea come from and why do you think it's been so persistent?
Well, it's actually demonstrably false. If you look at all of the times we've increased the minimum wage, about 22 separate times, there's really no correlation between what opponents say, which is if you raise the wage, you're going to have job loss. In fact, you often see the opposite. You often see employment actually increasing. And the reason why, I think, is because one of the things that traditional economic models don't account for is the purchasing power, the additional purchasing power that lower income workers have when they have more dollars in their pockets. Those dollars go straight into the economy. But we don't hear that. You're right. We don't hear that from the media a lot of the time. We certainly don't hear that from conservatives on the national and state and local levels. And that's because, you know, we've had this campaign for years and years and years in this country that has led us to believe that the way you grow the economy is if you cut taxes for the very, very rich, if you eliminate business regulations, that eventually, you know, some of that benefit will trickle down to everybody else. And we're now finally coming to terms, I think, as a country, that kind of model leaves most of Americans behind. I mean, it's really astounding if you kind of line up the statements that you heard beginning, you know, in the '60s, where we have a lot of these quotes, and all the way to modern day, to people like Paul Ryan and Marco Rubio and others. It's really almost identical. It's as if they've been kind of cribbing their notes from politicians in years gone by. We've all lived through these minimum wage increases, and you know, the sun still rose every morning and sat at night, and these great repercussions that we've been told about just never really came to pass.
So it's interesting that Igor mentioned those 22 minimum wage increases since 1938. Because it so happens, Hannah, that you talked to an economist who looked exactly at that.
I spoke with Dr. T. William Lester, who is a professor at UNC Chapel Hill, and he has just released a study with the National Employment Law Project where he looked explicitly at the 22 instances where the federal minimum wage has been increased and compared them to employment numbers in key indicator industries, including restaurants and hospitality and leisure.
So what do they find?
Well, the title of the study can tell you all that you need to know. The study's title is "Raise Wages, Kill Jobs?" Question mark. 7 decades of historical data finds no correlation between minimum wage increases and unemployment. Period.
That sounds conclusive.
T. William Lester, people call me Bill Lester, assistant professor in the Department of City and Regional Planning at UNC Chapel Hill. So Nelp asked me to just pull basic jobs data for the longest time period we could to explore all federal minimum wage increases. The first one was, where it was implemented, was 1938. So we could look every time there was a federal minimum wage increase, what happened to these various indicators, starting from total jobs, total private sector jobs, and then drilling down to as detailed as we can with national data, retail, leisure and hospitality, and then restaurants. One of the things we also looked at, I didn't have a chance to mention yet, was the number of small businesses. So switching now to the annual indicators, we looked at how many restaurants there were, how many total small businesses there were in the U.S., how many small restaurants, how many small retailers there were. And similarly, we find most often that actually increases after a minimum wage increase rather than declines. So again, not making a strong causal claim, but saying it's unlikely that if the minimum wage increase really resulted in, you know, the world falling apart, we'd expect these to go down, or at least go down more than half the time, and they actually don't. So Nelp just asked me to sort of pull the data, line up the minimum wage increases, and make these kind of broad calculations of the number of times the jobs went up in a year, the number of jobs went down in a year. If you believe the claim, or if you were just agnostic about it, that the minimum wage, you know, might kill jobs or might not kill jobs, you'd expect it to be kind of just a random event, like flipping a coin, right? So if we think we don't know, we're going to just look at the data and see what happens. Every time there was a federal minimum wage increase, going back to 1939, the present day, what happened to jobs 1 year later? So if we do that, just looking at total employment, total jobs in the economy, there were 22 events that we could study. 22 times the federal minimum wage changed. Well, 68% of the time, there was actually an increase in jobs, whereas 31% there was a decrease. And so, okay, if it's a fair coin, it doesn't look like a very fair coin, but it's actually biased in the direction that would not confirm that claim that minimum wage always, under any circumstances, kills jobs. So it's not supporting that idea. When you look at the industry that would be perhaps more affected than overall total employment, this leisure and hospitality sector, this broad sector that I'm talking about, the numbers are actually 81% of the time we see a positive change in jobs compared to 18% where we see a negative change in jobs. So even if this was a fair coin, you know, we're not picking that up. We're actually showing that it has more often the preponderance of the events that we've seen result in a positive change. And so I'm not talking about anything causal here, like there's a causal relationship, but if you believe there was a causal relationship that it was negative, it wouldn't support your argument.
Paul, you know what that sound was?
I have no idea.
That was a mic drop. I mean, that's really incredible. You, after 78 years of people warning that if you raise the minimum wage, you're going to kill jobs, we finally have an economist to look at 78 years of evidence, and he finds zero correlation between the minimum wage and unemployment.
Why haven't we heard about this until now? It seems like really simple analysis that should have been done a long time ago.
Well, the main reason is because the results contradict the theory. The theory has always been that equilibrium model. It's a zero-sum game. If you raise the cost of employment, then you'll get fewer jobs.
Now, the Congressional Budget Office is weighing in on the minimum wage debate. A new report explains that raising the minimum wage would cut poverty in America, but it could also cut up to 1 million jobs. So as you can imagine, both sides of the political aisle were quick to respond to this study. Jay Carney argued that there's ample documentation from economists who say that wage increase would help the jobs market. But John Boehner's office retorted, saying this report confirms what we've long known. While helping some, mandating higher wages has real costs, including fewer people working. With unemployment Americans' top concern, our focus should be creating, not destroying jobs for those who need them most.
My name is Heather Boucher, and I'm the Executive Director and Chief Economist at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth.
We're talking about the opposition to minimum wage, but one thing that we know is most people, and in fact most business owners, actually support some increase to the minimum wage. So my question then is, who benefits from keeping it low if much of the public will is tending toward increasing wages?
Who benefits? Well, obviously the people that are out there saying, we don't want to raise the minimum wage. And you see that coming a lot from organized business interests, the Chamber of Commerce, or other entities that are advocating on behalf of not raising the minimum wage. I mean, certainly it's a way of keeping, you know, wages low at the bottom, which evidently they think is good for our economy. I think there's a lot of evidence that that's not only not good for families and not good for people, but it's certainly not good for our economy overall. We've known for a long time, of course, that most people think that raising the minimum wage is a good idea, but that really is not just limited to citizens, but it is also some business owners and folks that think that this is a viable and important policy and one that they could accommodate if policymakers go out and set that level playing field. You know, so often when you hear the rebuttals from the other side, there seems to be this implicit assumption that we're just raising the minimum wage for one firm or one little small business, when in fact what we're doing when we raise the minimum wage as a policy issue is we raise it for everybody. So there's not really a competitive disadvantage to any one firm because it's a uniform policy that's fairly administered.
Right. And it seems that, you know, on that idea of sort of who it benefits, and we've seen now data that indicates that a higher minimum wage across the board actually really benefits businesses. So where is this idea coming from that raising the minimum wage is implicitly anti-business, and why do we know that that is not necessarily the case?
So there is a whole host of argument out there that anything that we do or that policymakers do that affects the way that firms do business is, by its very design, bad for business, right? I mean, that's sort of the quote-unquote trickle-down economic logic. It's a supply, it's the, you know, quote-unquote supply-side logic that anything that raises the cost for a single business at a single moment in time is bad. And that's an argument that we've been hearing for a very long time, and it's a somewhat not just simplistic but distorted view of economics. because, you know, when we think about what's good for the economy, we have to be thinking about not what is just good for a business in the short term, holding, you know, assuming that no other firm would be facing, you know, this cost increase. But we have to be thinking about what the implications are for families, for consumer demand, for labor supply, for productivity, all of which are sort of bigger than that very small argument. But yet that small argument is very powerful because I think it's very powerful for many people because it's really difficult to wrap your head around what the whole economy is. You know, we live in a country that has over 320 million people. We like have international trade. It's all of these big things, and really understanding how all of these pieces fit together can be hard. And so what folks to make these arguments about the anti-minimum wage or anti-regulatory agenda more generally, they often tap into the idea that the economy can be represented by a single little small business, and where everybody goes, oh, yeah, well, obviously, if government makes me increase my wages, that would be really hard for me as this imaginary small business owner to adapt to. And we need to open up that metaphor because it isn't. It's not only inaccurate, but it's inaccurate, and therefore it leads to the wrong conclusion. We need to give people tools to help think about the broader implications. And I think that's why many businesses are actually for this policy or for other labor standards more generally, because they see that there are economic benefits in the medium term or that aren't as obvious, that are important to those firms. Things like improved productivity or improved retention of workers or the way that they could see raising the minimum wage affecting demand among their consumers. All of these are things that are a little bit harder to see, but once you scratch the surface, they're there.
After talking to these economists, I was sort of struck by this question of, if this data was available and if these claims have been made for so long, why at no point has the left thought to just put together the history and put this data together? So, Zach, I'm interested to hear what you think.
Well, it's a great question. You know, from my perch, and as we're sitting here in the other Washington, I think a big part of it is that there, you know, the progressive movement is as captured by these ideas as the rest of the country and has been for a long time. And it, honestly, it took activists, thinkers, leaders, and folks here in Seattle to raise these fundamental questions about why are we accepting this this other explanation for how the economy works. And once people started asking those questions, the data revealed itself. But it honestly, this is part of the reason it's so important that we have people working outside of the Beltway, thinking about these things in new and exciting ways, because without that, people can get trapped in old thinking. And the progressive movement was trapped on wages for a really long time. And I think you can see this in other areas, too. And I think over time, as this piece falls, we're going to see other things happen where we're going to have more possibilities for what we can get done. And we can question some fundamental assumptions that even progressives have not been willing to question before.
The Other Washington is a production of Civic Skunk Works. Thanks to our guests, Igor Volsky, Heather Boucher, Professor Bill Lester, Professor Michael Reich, Zach Silk, and our benevolent plutocratic overlord, Nick Hanauer.
This show is produced by Tina Knoll at Large Media, with help from Nick Casella. Our assistant editor and make us sound good engineer is Shelley Goncharowski.
Find us on social media at Civic Skunk Works on Twitter and Facebook.
You can visit our blog at civicskunkworks.com, where you can also subscribe to this show. Or you can also go to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast.
Thanks for listening.